Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. We're taking a break from political candidates this week for a special guest. With me today is the Olympic runner Lopez Lomong. After the Olympics in London, his story is familiar to us. At the age of 6, he was taken by rebel soldiers in Sudan. He escaped from the rebel camp and, after a 3-day ordeal, made his way to Kenya and spent the next 10 years in a Kenyan refugee camp. Then he was relocated to the United States, to Tully, and Rob and Barbara Rogers, who adopted him. He went on to be a championship runner for Northern Arizona University and an Olympic athlete. He's the author of the recently published Running for My Life, One Lost Boy's Journey from the Killing Fields of Sudan to the Olympic Games. Lopez, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
There's a great story in your book about how you first developed your running talents in order to be allowed to play soccer at the refugee camp. And I was wondering if you could tell that story to me.
Yeah, absolutely. At the Kakuma refugee camp, a lot of kids always wanted to play soccer, but we have many of us. We only need about 22 people to play in soccer. So what the older boys do is, like, they're trying to funnel a lot of younger guys like me, myself, that everybody have to run 18 miles, which is 30 kilometers around the camp, so that the fastest ones can be able to be on the fields and play a little bit more soccer. So by the time we get there, the younger ones, after 6 hours or so sometimes, and then we go out, and the rest of the other guys who already been there a little earlier get exhausted of playing soccer. So we take the field.
That's pretty serious endurance training every day you want to play that game, though.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is the thing, like, because you have something you're thinking about, you want to be playing that soccer, something driving you. So you don't even tend to, like, think about, you know, the water that you need to drink, or, you know, food or energy that you need to put in your body, as we are doing right now as an athlete. So it was just something like, you know, I want to play that soccer so bad. So therefore, I need to run as fast as that anybody else so that I can get an opportunity to play that soccer.
So is that when you first became aware that you were good at this, that you were an exceptional runner?
Well, I thought maybe I was a football player, which is a soccer player.
Right.
But therefore, like, you know, I always wanted to win. You know, and I don't like losing. And so a lot of guys were, I was playing so, like, I just keep the ball with me so that I can go score so that my team will win. But most of the time, you know, I don't know how to distribute the ball. So I was told by my teammate to go and play goalie so that I can learn how to distribute the ball. So so that's how I decided to be, you know, I became a goalkeeper by then, and I, you know, became pretty good. So I didn't know that I was actually a runner.
But you were a ball hog in the soccer, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely.
So I understand also that it was hard for you when you came to high school and you were in Tully to be convinced to become a competitive runner. Is that right? It was hard for them to convince you to do this?
My high school coach came in one day and, you know, brought a nice jacket with my name on, Lomong, on the back. And it says, hey, if you want to run cross-country for me, you can be able to have this jacket. And so I look back, and in Africa, if you have something with your name on, it's incredible. So I decided to, like, okay, since I'm not going to let this guy to take the jacket away from me, and I say, okay, I need to run that cross-country so that I can keep this jacket. So that's how I get convinced to be a runner, cross-country runner, 2001.
And so when was the moment where you first thought and realized, I'm really good at this? I'm really a good runner. When did that happen?
When I ran as fast as I like to go and beat the golf cart, which was leading the race in ESM, I didn't know that, like, you know, because my coach with the English barrier, my coach told me that just run as, you know, in front of everybody, don't let anybody to beat you, and you will do well. So he didn't tell me that, how, there is somebody else that will be showing, you know, the people the course and how to run the course and things like that. So. So I chased this guy who was riding a golf cart and in front of us, and I ran as fast and beat him twice, and that's what kind of cost me a win that day. And I came back and I really listened to, like, you know, coaching. It's like, then, like, you know, the race doesn't sometimes won by at the beginning. The race is being won by at the end of the race, how much do you really have an energy to do that? So that's how I learned to be a runner. And from that point, I get really motivated to run. And here we go until now.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Lopez Lamong, the Olympic runner. Well, where do you see your running career going from here?
Well, I'm already a two-time Olympian right now, and I'm still hungry to be able to give back to this country. Thinking about, you know, the Rio, which is 2016, in 4 years. So I'm taking some time downtown right now, and then eventually in November, I go back and to training again because I need to win a gold medal for this country, and I want to bring that gold medal to the people in Central New York, that people who supported me so much and give me so much, and I'm gonna go out there and really inspire a lot of people that we can actually have Olympians come from this in upstate New York as well, and so that's my ambition right now, and that's what I'm focusing as well.
You know, I want to ask you about something you just touched on in a particular way there. You have written and spoken powerfully about your national pride as an American citizen and your thanks to America, your thanks to Tully, your parents who adopted you, and particularly your pride in competing as an American citizen for the USA in the Olympics. Your teammates chose you to carry the flag in the Beijing opening ceremony. So what is it about you that's the most American, do you think?
I mean, everything. I think I try to do everything I can to give back to this country because they give me an opportunity. They open the doors. They welcome me here and just basically, give me that childhood back to be able to chase my dreams and to be able to chase everything that I can. And it's only this country that I can be able to attain that dream. And yes, it's a land of opportunity, but to me, it's a land next to heaven because I can be able to do anything that I put my mind in, and nobody's going to, go back and say where you come from and all these things. And this is a land of immigrants, and everybody came from somewhere, and we all make it through and we have to overcome a lot of obstacles. And all those obstacles that I overcome, now it pays off because my patience and the people that I met changed my life completely through all these years. So since I was taken away from my family, a place of peace, I ended up spending all these 10 years of my life in a refugee camp, a place of no country. I never had an opportunity to see my flag being raised that high. But when I came to the United States, I'm no longer Lopez Lamong, a lost boy of Sudan, but I'm an American. So that's what I followed. That's what made me an American, and that's why I love this country so much, and I want to give back as much as I can. Eventually, after my running, I would like to probably give back and, kind of develop some of the athletes as well to attain their opportunity, their potential, the possibility to be an Olympian athlete as well. So if I can do it, then I can be able to go help somebody else to be able to do it, what I did not finish.
This is a tougher question for you, I think, but I wanted to ask it. I think the people who come and join this country from somewhere else often are the best observers of life here, both the good things and the bad things. And so I wanted to ask you, if you could change one thing about America, what would it be?
In America, we tend to kind of take things for granted, which is the most important thing. And, most of us who came from other countries and we are really, thirsty for education. We are very thirsty for, somebody who just come there and say, you matter. You're an incredible human being. So we're going to be caring for you. So all those things, as long as you come here, you tend to just take things they're supposed to be there anyway. But, I think taking things for granted is, I could probably change that and let people actually, enjoy the fruit of what, our forefathers and, our parents and, worked so hard to give us. And, that's basically it.
And it sounds like, too, then that you're planning on trying to do that when you were telling me what you wanted to do with your running career and eventually help others to develop their skills and to work with them. It sounds like it's exactly then what you're sort of pushing on, exactly what you would want to see change about the United States, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think, you know, to be able to, like, go out there to the people who are really, really, like, you know, need help, you know. We have a lot of, like, need, you know, in our cities and in our towns and in our, you know, schools and things like that. So for me to be able to go out there and just kind of like tell my story and say, look, this is where I came from, and this is what, you know, you can be able to be that as well, and really empower these young guys and young kids and even immigrants, you know, who are still coming from all over the world into this country. Just say, like, you know, this is for you to go anywhere. This is the path that you need to follow, and you need to think positively. You can get a job here. You can do anything. You can own a home, anything you want. American dream. So this is how you can be able to attain that.
A religious faith figures prominently in your story, I think particularly in your story about your life in the refugee camp. And many people who have read your book say that it has reinvigorated their own faith. So I'd like to hear you tell me a little bit about how you've drawn on faith in your life.
Yeah, basically, you know, faith is what kept me all the way until I'm speaking to you right now. You know, I put everything to God, that anything can be attained when I follow him, when I listen to him. You know, I might sleep, I might sleep without food right now, but I know that soon I can be able to eat. And, you know, the journey that I took, running 3 days, three nights through the wilderness and of Africa and all this, and in Savannah and all that, you know, it's just like, I don't think a 6 years old kid can be able to have that, you know, just kind of like courage to be able to just keep pushing and keep pushing without somebody else who was watching over me. And, you know, kind of like, you know, everything about me was just like, you know, I was there because God put me there to survive and tell the story of the people who are still surviving right now, going through what I went through. So it's my faith, who, you know, kept me going and kept me put the, you know, one foot after the other.
And if I remember correctly from your story, when you were taken by the rebels in Sudan, it was at a church where you were taken. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It was in the church. That's when basically that changed my life, because I never understand. I thought church was, you know, it's a house of God, because that is the place that it's a peaceful place. We can go out there, celebrate and worship, and, you know. But when that happened, I knew that, okay, this is like anything can happen anywhere. So that is what really kept me going and kept me like said, okay, now I think God played his role. Like, you know, the reason why I was taken away is to be able for me to open my eyes and see what's the great work God put, and now I'm here, and I'm in the United States, and, you know, and now I'm a spokesperson for the other kids who are still did not have a chance to come to the United States or go somewhere else safe.
I want to come back to that in a little bit, but I wanted to ask you a question, well, related to that, really. You started a foundation for South Sudan, and for our listeners who are looking for it, that four is the number four. Tell me about the foundation and the work that it does.
Yes. For South Sudan, it's basically the organization that really made me say, like, I'm thinking after I met my family for the first time in 2007, and the thing that they are still going through, the water that we are drinking and the food that they are eating and medicine that they don't even have. So education piece, you know, and so this is the four things that we had end up like, I'm going to give back to that country. It's for South Sudan, which focus with education piece, clean water, healthcare, and nutrition. And my foundation is not about, you know, giving people the, you know, like money and all these things. And it's about empowering and really pushing for that impact on how can we, you know, give and improve the lives of the people. You know, you can, somebody says, like, you know, you teach a man to fish and it will, you know, fish for the rest of their lives. So the thing is, like, for me and the foundation is, like, we empower the people by giving the clean water, because nobody wants to go without clean water. In my house, I go to the tap and and get the clean water and drink it. But other people have to walk for 18, 15 miles to go to just to get that. And on the way, sometimes they get, abused or something like that. And the kids, the girls could not be able to go to school because they have to go fetch the water and fetch the firewood and all of these things. So we are trying to do the impact by giving an opportunity, clean water to the people in the villages and education. Whether, therefore, the kids can be able to go to school instead of going to fetch the water and healthcare. You know, I witnessed a lot of kids who are dying from their families' hands because, you know, they didn't have medicine. All they are doing is they send them to my tent and say, let Lopez go and help you. But unfortunately, I didn't have any medicine with me. I only have my little pills, which was keeping me, to prevent me away from getting malaria. And to see that, I'm like, well, we're totally living different lives. You know, in America, if I get sick or something, I go get the over-counter medicine and take it, and I'll be fine. So that's what the focus is. You know, for South Sudan is a campaign that we're trying to give to the South Sudanese, South Sudan, because right now, as we know, South Sudan is a sovereign country right now with a lot of challenges and a lot of obstacles that, you know, we're trying to help as much as I can.
In case you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm speaking with the Olympic runner, Lopez Lamong. You mentioned something there, meeting your family in 2007 in Sudan. That was the meeting with your parents when you had assumed that they had been killed, right?
Oh, absolutely.
What was that like?
It was just incredible. It was a big celebration that, to unite with somebody after 17 years is just incredible. And it wasn't just like I'm uniting with this person like I've already know about the picture of this person, things like that. But I knew when I was taken away, I was just like this little kid. Everything is big, and my family were very like. But to see them, the struggle that they were doing, and yet they still smile. They're still keeping us, happy in our home. It's just incredible. So when I went there, I just a lot of people in the village came in, and they never see like a car coming in, and it's everything was documented by the HBO by Brian Gumbel, which was sponsoring me to go there, and it's just amazing reunion. And I get to meet two of my brothers, Alex and Peter, which I, after the games in 2008, I went out and got them to go to school, and they are now in Virginia going to school. So it's amazing.
I want to come back to the issue of the South Sudan. What has the independence of South Sudan meant for you?
It means so much to me because there is a lot of us who grew up in refugee camps and all these other things, and like our people have been suffering so much. But to see that peace coming to that land, it's amazing. And people ended up like having a flag on their heads and look and what they are doing, thinking about maybe improving their lives by going to school, improving their lives, just to be in peace is what means so much, not only to me, but to my parents who were born in the wars and things like that. They never see the fruit of peace, but now they got that, and it's a great feeling to see that impact.
But it does seem like though that the conflicts there are not over yet, and I've read that. And it's been said that the continuation of the conflicts are creating perhaps a new generation of lost boys. Is that something that concerns you? And
I'm very concerned with the war, period, because what the war did to us as, the lost boys that, came to this country was devastating, because a lot of us, it's like, most of the lost boys lost their parents and lost their relatives and things like that in the war. So we cannot afford another war, We just have to, get this government to sit down and really see what they can be able to do for the people, and go back to do the demarcation of the borders and things like that, and, just to solve that diplomatically, And it will be very hard for, to see that happen again, and to see the family running away again, and to see the more refugee children being going to the other countries for refuge and things like that, it will be very devastating. And so for us, the West really gave us an opportunity, give us that, you know, that the love that we you know, that's the reason why we are here, and we got all our education and everything like that. It would be very nice to for the United States to be able to think like, say, we work so hard to give you, to give that South Sudan independence. So it's good for us to oversee that independence be implemented and be people to be in peace. And it's not about, you know, the oil that is in there and the IBA and all this, Southern Kordofan and all that. So it's about the peace. You know, everything else is could be resolved in diplomatically.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I'm an activist for the people who trying to change their lives in either athletically and either, like, you know, athletically, especially in athletics, because I think in athletics is the most powerful thing because it unites people. You know, it doesn't have, you know, if I run a mile, everybody else in the whole world run a mile and they know how to run the other mile. And that it's a union of like, it's a powerful bonding. I want to be able to use my athletic ability to unite the people, to think that they are one South Sudanese, just the way America said we are American. We don't have, you know, East America, West America, and all these things. So.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Well, I think that coming here was the barrier of language, actually. And, you know, learning a totally different language, which is English. And at the same time, you got to learn the culture of the people. The culture that I came with in Sudan or, you know, it was totally different from what I saw here. And I wish I could have, you know, people of, you know, IOM people who would have teach us a little bit more about, you know, not just how to cross the road in the United States, but how can we go out and shake hands with the people, look them in the eyes and say, hey, I'm qualified to work in your farm, and this is how I can be able to impact and bring the positive thing to the company and all these things. So we tend to be very reserved, you know, especially a lot of immigrants come here. They tend to reserve and stay in their own comfort zone, which is their, like, the place that they stay in or, like, the tribe and all these things. And so, yeah.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
To make the second Olympics, you know. Making that second Olympic was just like, wow. Well, first of all, I'm an Olympian. And to be called a second Olympian, it's just amazing.
That was Lopez Lamong. His book is Running for My Life, One Lost Boy's Journey from the Killing Fields of Sudan to the Olympic Games. Lopez, it's been a thrill to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.